and the committee, the work session planned on House Bill 2076 will not happen. We'll carry that one, continue to look at that one, and so I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2371. And Janet, can you give us a rundown?
Yes, Mr. Chair, good morning. House Bill 2371 was introduced at the request of the Oregon Funeral Directors Association and would allow a specified percent of prearranged funeral trust funds to be spent for payment of qualified expenses, taxes, and fees related to maintenance of the trust. Mr. Chair, if you'll notice on the changes on the second page of the bill, and in lines 25 to 27, and there's another change in line 20, taking out the word earnings of. And there's a blank in line 25, and that is filled by the dash one amendments that you should also have. And the dash one amendments specify that it's up to 2% of the trust fund principal that may be spent for qualifying expenses annually. And it further specifies that the value of the trust fund will be calculated as the value of the trust fund on January 1st each year. Mr. Chair, the qualifying expenses are listed in the bill, and those are accounting fees, taxes, depository fees, investment manager fees, or other necessary fees. Currently, it's limited to 25% of the interest earnings, and the bill would make it up to 2% of the principal. Mr. Chair.
Could I have Scott Mace, please? And John Brenneman,
please.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Brenneman. I'm a lobbyist for the Oregon Funeral Directors Association, and with me today is Scott Macy, who's the chair of the trust that we operate, and he'll explain pretty much what Janet's already explained and the reason we need a fix. Scott.
Chairman Brown and members of the committee, my name is Scott Macy, and I operate a funeral home in McMinnville, Oregon. I'm also the chairperson of the Funeral Service Agency, who is the managing agent for the National Funeral Trust Service, which is a master trustee for the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. When citizens in the state of Oregon want to pre-plan a funeral, which is in the last 20 years is increasingly so, they come into a funeral home and request that they pre-plan the details of the funeral, and then they often want to prepay for that funeral. They either do that through a vehicle of insurance or through a trust in the state of Oregon. In 1985, the Oregon Funeral Directors Association determined that instead of individual funeral homes having a relationship with a bank, that they were could be more advantageous to the consumer and to the funeral home to pool those funds and become a master trustee. So in 1985, this was done, and throughout the last 20 years, the Oregon Funeral Directors Association, through their National Funeral Trust, has administrated funds in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 million for a number of funeral homes in the state of Oregon. We are regulated by the state of Oregon in the statute, not only in the way we operate our trust fund, but also in the way we invest our money in the trust. The type of investments are restricted to government agencies, bankers' acceptances, corporate bonds, which have a rating of at least A, and also guarantee investment contracts. Because of the conservative nature of these types of funds that we're able to invest in, there are years where we don't receive enough interest return from these investments in order to cover our fixed operating costs. In some years, especially most recently, the bond funds have been fairly low. Last year, the intermediate bond index was around 3%. I think we made about 2%. So when we are restricted to the 25% of the interest that we're allowed on current state statute, it doesn't allow us to cover the fixed cost. So what we're asking the committee to evaluate is to allow us to solve this problem by spending up 2% of the fund each year. Actually, 2% of the mark or the value of the fund at the beginning of the calendar year.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holy.
I'm just curious, typically how many years do these trust funds go on?
Nationally, the figure is about 7 years. We have trust funds that have been with us for up to 20 years, but on a national average, 7 years. Some last maybe only a year or two.
Follow, Mr. Chair?
Hold on.
So, on average, 7 years, and two, say, I don't know what the typical price for a prepayment is, say $10,000 for a funeral, that'd be $200 a year for 7 years, that'd be $1,400 for roughly 7 years then? Something like that for these costs you're talking about?
Roughly. Correct.
If the earnings, the 25% per calendar year of earnings was not enough to cover the cost of operating the trust, did it depreciate the principal of the trust?
Well, it would, but if there are two types of prepaid funerals in the state of Oregon, one in which we guarantee the cost of all the services that we are providing, and another one's a non-guaranteed. So there's two scenarios, actually three scenarios that can happen. If a person enters a funeral home and enters into a non-guaranteed contract or a guaranteed contract and chooses to terminate that within a year or two, even though the market may have not had enough interest to maybe lose a slight amount of principal, I mean, that doesn't happen very often, but it can. The funeral home still required to return 100% of that money plus the interest that was gained. The second scenario would be in a prearranged funeral, and let's say that the person lived for 10 years and the fund did not keep up with the price of the funeral home, it increased their prices. The funeral home is still responsible to come up with those services for whatever amount of money is in the trust, if it was a guaranteed trust. In our case, probably 80% of our funerals are guaranteed. In the case of a non-guaranteed funeral trust, what happens is that the person comes in, they may make payments over the course of the years. If they get to a point where it's fully prepaid, then we'll guarantee it. If it doesn't, then we take whatever money is that's been in the trust and the earnings and apply that towards the current cost.
Okay, so as this is now, the cost of the trusts are taken at the rate of 25% of the earnings of the trust. So the earnings of the trust for that year, 25%, up to 25% of that can be applied against the cost of the trust or the maintaining the trust. Is that right? And this, with this change then, it is 2% of the total value of the trust. Is that right?
Up to 2%.
With the amendment.
Right.
With the amendment.
Even when it was 25%, the Oregon Funeral Directors Association averaged approximately 17 or 18%. We have never charged the full amount of the trust. Master trustees are a competitive thing in the state of Oregon, so it's more advantageous for us to keep our cost as low as possible. Last year, our cost was around 1.3%, for example. But given the return on the conservative investments that we're lended to, last year the intermediate bond district or indices only did 3%. We did about 2.6%. which put us with our fixed cost in a situation where we had to go into back to the association for help on that.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Messi, I think I get how this will help people who are providing the product. What do you think the effect might be on the consumers of the prepaid insurance plans? Do you think there will be any effect to the pocketbooks of the families who are, will be buying these?
I don't think so. First of all, if the family chooses to move their funeral trust from my funeral home, maybe down to Arizona, the family moves, they're, according to statute, they're required to get 100% of that money back, plus any interest that was earned. So it won't affect those consumers. And the fact that it's a prearranged funeral plan, in which we guarantee, which is about 80% of our funds, or 80% of our pre-need contracts, we guarantee those services. So if we're a little bit short, then the funeral home is required by law to make up that difference. In the case of a non-guaranteed contract, it's only good business sense for funeral homes not to say that you don't have as much money that you put into the trust. So, I mean, if we were in that situation, I know our funeral home would at least allow the amount of money that went in. Probably the only time that's going to occur is if the participant came in, let's say next year, and the bond industry only, you know, maybe lost a percent. And you have to remember that doesn't happen that often, although it does happen. Maybe once every 10 years, I think. In the last 10 years, there's been a negative return on bonds. If that were to happen, I'm sure that the funeral home, I know we would, in our case, return all that money to the participant. But if he were to leave it in there for 3 or 4 years, he would have made some money off of that fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? None. Thank you.
Chair, John Brenham again for the record. I wanted to notify the committee. I'm not sure that everybody, I know you were, Chair Brown, that the Oregon Bankers Association has been working with me on this, and I asked them to put in a word of support by written testimony, but I'm not sure it got there. But the 2% really was arrived at in collaboration with them. We had originally anticipated asking for a smaller number, but they have some banks that are working trust too, and it was with their urging that we ended up at the 2%.
Duly noted. Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Okay. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2371 and open a work session on House Bill 2371. Representative Kipps.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2371
amendments.
I would move the dash one amendments into House Bill 2371.
Representative Kipps moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2371. Is there any objection? Seeing none, they're adopted. Representative Kipps.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2371 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2371 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendations. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Westbrook.
Excuse me.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative Chopper.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We need a carrier on the floor.
I'll do this one.
Representative Shields volunteers. Let's see. I want to open a public hearing on House Bill 2097. And Janet, can you get us up to speed, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2097, and before I forget to say anything about it, it does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. House 2097 was pre-session filed at the request of the State Landscape Contractors Board. and would create an arborist license and consolidate the licensing of arborists under the Oregon Landscape Contractors Board. It does establish in Section 2 of the bill examination, experience, and certification requirements for the arborist license. And it specifies that a licensed arborist is defined on page 3 of the bill, lines 18 to 22. And then if you look over on page 4 of the bill, it says a person may not operate as an arborist in the state without a valid arborist license. It specifies that a licensed arborist is authorized to perform arboriculture only if they're licensed and bonded, if they're a licensed and bonded landscape contractor, or they're an employee of a licensed and bonded landscape contractor. There are provisions in the bill that allow the Landscape Contractors Board to suspend or refuse a landscaping business license for specified purposes. And if you look at page 5 of the bill, are where the exceptions are for not having to have a landscape contractor's license, and those are carried over to the situation where you would not have to have an arborist license. And those include if you're a landscape maintenance business, so you just do maintenance, and that's defined if you're an owner of a property and you're contracting for some work, or if you're a general contractor and you do less than a certain amount of residential landscaping work as part of the contract on the building of the house or remodeling of the house. So those exemptions are on page 5. And at the end of the bill, it says that if you are a residential-only construction contractor and you do work that's of a certain size that's related to tree removal and pruning, you'll have to become an arborist or get an arborist license upon your first renewal of your construction contractor's license. Mr. Chair, a bulk of the bill is also grammatical changes and rearranging existing provisions of law, so it makes it very difficult to read. So if you have any questions about what something says, it may be just a repeat of something else that's already in existing law. Mr. Chair, there is a -1 amendment, and it would include stump removal in the list of activities that do not require an arborist license. But that's only if it's performed by a construction contractor in conjunction with a construction or remodeling project. So you'd still have to have a stump removal license. A construction license to do stump removal. But it would not require an arborist license if you are a construction contractor. And there was one minor change that adds in the amendment that adds that notices of change of address be in writing.
Okay, thank you, Janet. This one is YMP. They're 100 miles away. Okay, could I have Michael Snyder, please, first to explain this in very great detail? Enough detail so Representative Schaffer will be able to carry this bill on the floor for me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come in and talk to you today about this bill. For the record, my name is Michael Snyder. I am the administrator of the State Landscape Contractors Board for the state of Oregon. The Landscape Contractors Board is an agency, state agency, that regulates landscape contracting in the state of Oregon. It does not regulate landscape maintenance. Currently, we have two licenses required, which creates some confusion in the landscape work, but I'd like to explain it very briefly to you. We do extensive examination of individual landscape contractors. What we call them is landscape contractors in the statute. It's a little bit of a misnomer because the individual is not the entity that the consumer contracts with. The consumer contracts with a licensed landscaping business. That is the entity that carries the bond and the insurance and the workers' comps to make sure that the consumer is protected and they have all the necessary insurances to perform the landscaping work. However, a landscape contractor, which is an individual, takes an extensive examination that proves a minimum level of competency in performing landscape work. It is required of that because there's no permit process that's in place through the building codes to inspect most of the work that's done by landscape contracting. Planting a lawn, planting trees, shrubs, nobody comes and looks at it. So we, as an agency and as an industry, have decided to examine those people, require a very extensive exam, a comprehensive exam for them to do that. Therefore, that person then, in order to work in the state of Oregon, has to be either an employee of or an owner of a licensed business. And that's the entity that the consumer contracts with. House Bill 2097 was, for years, arborists, in order to perform their true profession, which includes pruning of trees, cabling, guying, stump removal, removal of trees, bracing, those technical things. And it also included when they take a tree out, they would like to plant a new one in its place. In order for them to do that, under current law, they would have to be licensed, number one, with the Construction Contractors Board, who had the authority or the statutory authority for a residential contractor to do stump grinding, tree pruning, cabling, bracing. That was in their statute. It would also have to be licensed then to do the replacement planting if it exceeded $500 per year per job site, but didn't take many trees to do that. They had to be licensed with the Landscape Contractors Board. So those people had to have two licenses to actually perform their profession. Arbor care is a green industry function. And so we got a lot of calls about arborists. Why would they license the Landscape Contractors Board? And the arborists were concerned about it because they had to do two licenses. So they, at their request, we introduced Bill 2097 to streamline the process that arborists then would only have to get a license with the Landscape Contractors Board. This would allow them to prune the trees, brace them, and do the transplanting of trees and replacement of trees that they needed for their profession. Currently, there's, according to the arborist, from what we can tell, there's about 600 what they call arborists, which are distinguished from tree care people, and they have had the International Society of Arboriculture certification. It's called the ISA certification. It's an exam that they take to demonstrate their proficiency and knowledge and skill of pruning, bracing, climbing trees, and doing the work that's required of an arborist. There are, we think, there are about 600 of those that are existing in the state of Oregon. There's about 900 tree care and arborists combined that are licensed with the CCB. We don't have an accurate count on that, but that's what was brought to our attention. So this would affect those 900 people. The bill would require is introducing an arborist license through the Landscape Contractors Board, which then there would be a competency test that would be associated with that license. They would demonstrate their competency, and we have, by rule, the Landscape Contractors Board has the intention of adopting the ISA certification as the competency requirement for this license. So those people that are currently licensed with the CCB and that have their ISA certification would not undergo any further testing and become licensed with the Landscape Contractors Board. Those that don't have that ISA certification would have to either take the ISA certification or take the test that the board is going to, if this passes, will develop to determine that proficiency and competency in doing that work. We support this bill, and It does streamline the process. It removes the requirement for two licenses and two bonds, and we would recommend that you pass it on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. I got my contractor's license. I show up to these folks' house, and they want to put a patio where there's a tree stump. I can still legally go grind that stump out, correct?
That's correct, sir.
Without being an arborist?
Without being an arborist.
Thank you.
Representative Kitts.
If I own my own home and I don't have a CCB and I want to pour concrete on a small patch and I have a stump, I can't do it, correct?
As far as I know, you can.
I can?
For your own home. It's for your own property.
Just not for anybody else to
pay. For compensation.
Compensation. Thank you.
Representative Shields.
I can't afford you.
No.
No, thank you.
Maybe you've heard.
For the record.
Chair Brown, for the other, I'd like to make one more comment that Committee Administrator Janet asked me about. One of the things on this, on your summary, it says deletes references to landscape contractor from insurance and financial responsibility provisions and from restrictions on exempt businesses. One of the things this bill does that we've tried to clear up for a long time is the difference between the landscape contractor and the landscaping business. The term landscape contractor, as I said before, is a misnomer. It's not the person that does the contracting. It's the business. So this provision is taking the insurance requirements away from the individual and putting it onto the business where it belongs. And so I think you'll see that in Section 23 is where that basically is taking place. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for the testimony. Bill Cross and Joe Lim, is it?
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross, and I work with the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, and my job today is to introduce you to Joe Limp, who is their legislative committee chair and owns a landscape operation over in Central Oregon and is a past president, which I guess is why he was now assigned to become their legislative committee chair out of punishment. I don't know. Anyway, Joe will present our statement, or briefly review it, I should say.
Thank you.
Members of the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs, I appreciate the opportunity I have to come here and tell you that the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association is in full support of this bill.
Joe, for the record, could I get you to identify yourself so that shows up on the tape?
My name is Joe Limp. I'm the owner of Deschutes Environmental Services in Sun River, Oregon.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
This bill streamlines the state's licensure program by consolidating the arborists under one agency, the Landscape Contractors Board. From the consumer's point of view, I think that they think of arboriculture as a green industry practice, so it makes sense that the arborists be under the Landscape Contractors Board as compared to just being on the CCB. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify. Are there any questions?
Anyone have any questions? Don't see any.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holden.
I got to fire one out there anyway. I just want to clear up one thing about the construction contractor, a general contractor who performs landscaping work. From what I read in here, if the landscaping work that a general contractor does is less than $2,500, he doesn't have to have a landscape contractor license. If it's over $25, he does.
I believe that's true if he is building that house for an individual, I think it reads, rather than as a speculative venture.
Can I follow?
Follow up.
So I just want to be clear that a construction contractor then that wants to perform site work like, you know, that is described in his plans, that he can do that without a landscape contractor's license. But if he wants to plant arborist or plants and things like that, that's where that $2,500 comes in. Am I right on that? Or
Chair Brown, Representative Holvey, thank you. I'd like to address that issue. The provision in the law is that landscape contracting requires a license by the Landscape Contractors Board. However, there is an exemption for those that are construction contractors licensed under Statute 701 that have a contract with an owner of a property, of a person that wants to build a house. They have a contract with a consumer that wants to build a house. That general contractor can perform up to, according to statute, $2,500 of landscaping work that is normally done by a landscape contracting business, planting shrubs, trees, that type of work. They can do that type up to that amount on that house if they have a contract with that owner to build the house. Now, that number, $2,500, is connected to by statute to the CPI, which is supposed to be reviewed every 5 years. And the board just did that in 2003, I believe, and it's now raised to $3,000 of work. The exemption only applies to those that are CCB licensed and are under contract with a consumer to build a house. It is not for those contractors that are doing developments. Okay, this if they're going to put the house up for sale, they have to hire a licensed landscaping business to do the work. This has history, and I'll go back to the history of this because it's caused some significant issues in the industry. Back in 1995, there was a case that came up in Central Oregon where we had a developer that built houses, did all the landscaping on the work. He owned the property, did all the landscaping on the property, and then sold the houses. Well, our statutes at that time were not very clear that required a landscaping business. We cited that individual civil penalties. He appealed the case to the appellate court, and the Landscape Contractors Board, I think, spent $15,000, you know, or whatever, to defend this decision. And in the appellate court, he won. And so, in 1997, the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association introduced a bill that would restrict, they wanted to restrict everything that's been with landscaping to be done by landscape contractors. Well, as a compromise, came down to, you know, all the lobbyist groups that got involved in that, and I think Bill Cross maybe could speak more directly to this, but as a compromise, there was this exemption made that if you were under contract to build the home for a consumer, then you were allowed, at that time, $2,500 worth of work. But if you're going to sell the house again and do development, then you had to hire licensed landscape contracting businesses to do that work. Does that clear up that?
Okay, follow up.
Just real shortly. I'm just, you know, I'm not trying to question the, sure, you know, the lawns and the trees, but I guess my specific question is more about site work like a retaining wall and water feature, a big pond or pool or something like that. Does a general contractor have to have a landscaper contractor's license to do those sorts of things?
Chair Brown, Representative Holvey, no. And within the construction contractor's license, they are allowed to do retaining walls, to do concrete work, to do decks, fences, you know, everything like that. Water features, as long as they don't plant the water feature, okay. But they can build those things within their license, and they don't have to have a landscape contractor's license.
Thank you. That answered my question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Representative Kitts.
Michael, I just had a clarification based on what you said. I got confused. Very easily done. If I'm a developer and I put in a subdivision of, let's just say, for example, row homes, and generally speaking, a row home will have a very small front yard and close to no backyard. It's a patio with a deck. Setbacks are like 5 feet, 7 feet, something of this nature. If I'm the developer in that situation, with the parameters that are set forward, I can't put bark dust, grass seed, and plant a tree in the front yard if I intend to sell that without being a landscape contractor. Is that what I'm to understand? Because that would fall under. It'd probably be $150 versus $3,000, but I can't do that, can I?
That's correct, because that was the compromise that was made back in 1997. Instead of allowing them to do it wholesale, because the work was really landscape contracting work. Okay, so there should have been, according to the way the industry wanted, they should have been licensed with Landscape Contractors Board to do planting of any type. But there was a compromise made back in 97 to allow just a specific amount for a specific condition. And that's the way it stands today.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Could I have Ray Carter, please? Morning, sir.
Good morning, Chairman Hunt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ray Carter. I'm the General Manager of General Tree Service in Clackamas, Oregon. We service the greater Portland metro area, providing our bulk of services. I agree with the previous testimony that needing only to be licensed by one agency is streamlined the process. And I think that's been stated very well. The part of this bill that I also support is the competency measures. There will be a test involved. I think some of the issues in regards to some of the questions that have been asked by the committee really resolve around competencies. For instance, if you're a developer planting trees, even a small landscape, such as you mentioned, Mr. Pitts, you plant the tree too deep, that tree eventually will create a hazard. The tree may grow and do well for the next 10 or 15 years, but then it becomes a size big enough where it can tip over and actually cause damage to the house when initially, if that tree had been planted properly, that wouldn't happen. So competency issue is the main subject of my testimony. Working in the Portland metropolitan area, I see terrible abuses done by people proclaiming themselves as an arborist when, in fact, they're actually doing more damage to the tree than good. And the consumer doesn't have any knowledge of whether that was a good pruning job at all. Those trees that I've seen can actually create more of a hazard. They, for instance, if you had a birch tree in your parking strip that was you felt was too tall and you were a little bit nervous about that, as a consumer, you may call somebody like me to come out and want that tree topped. Topping that tree eliminates some of the hazard immediately, but in the long run actually increases that hazard many fold. As that tree begins to grow again, those attachments, those limbs that are now growing beyond that topping cut are much more likely to fail and fall on a car or a pedestrian or whatever. So competency is the main issue that I submit in this testimony here.
Thank you, Ray. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony. Mario Vaden. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Well, I'm Mario Vaden. I'm from Beaverton, Oregon. I'm on the Landscape Contractors Board, but at the moment I'm going to speak representing myself as a contractor. And this bill, the streamlining is an enormous part.
Can I get you to identify yourself?
Oh.
So we have it on record.
I'm Mario Vaden from Beaverton, Oregon. My company is MD Vaden.
Okay. Thank you.
One reason I wanted to testify today is I have a neutral position on this. I'm a landscape contractors board member, but I believed in this concept before most of their board members had had a chance to discuss it. The reason being, I am a certified landscape technician. I'm a licensed landscape contractor, and I am a certified arborist too. We're not talking two technologies on this. There's the technology of tree care and landscaping is nearly identical, and a lot of people fail to recognize this. So really, just from a technology point of view, and for the benefit of the consumers in the state, the arborists, the people that apply the tree part of it, should be the landscapers too, they should all be talking together more. They will do this more efficiently when they're all licensed together under one board, and an additional license is not needed. I find restrictions on myself as a contractor with the two licensing system. There's already an enormous amount of licenses that are needed for landscape individuals. You would need landscape contractor's license. You would need a city business license, so therefore you could say get the metropolitan area license. But Portland is not in on that, so if you want to be in Portland, you have to get Portland because they're not part of that program. And if I want to apply pesticides, then I also need the Oregon Department of Agriculture license for pesticides. And I may need a second one of those as an operator. So there's an enormous amount of licenses that I already need. And to do all tree work without any gray area on this, I would need the CCB license also the way it is, and that's not best, and it's not needed. It's really best that this is streamlined and down to one. And I perform both sides of this work for what I can do here, and this is just the best way to go. One thing I wanted to add here real quick, you had good questions about the $2,500 exemption for the CCB people, and I understand that that's not the biggest part of what this bill is about. That dollar amount you've noticed there, but that's already the way it is with the Landscape Contractors Board. The big picture here is to get the arborists licensed under the same board as the landscape contractors at this time. And the preparation for the licensing is attainable and affordable. If this goes through, you might hear about some concerns for hardship, and I've prepared for both ends of this, the landscaping and as a landscape tech, and I'm a certified arborist, and I know whatever it will take to make the transition for a few people is attainable and affordable. It should not be a burden on them. So that's all I have to share.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have one question.
Representative Schaffer.
It's really not related to this bill, but it's related to arborists and trees. Do you think the cities, in your opinion, where you work, are doing a good enough job to make sure that folks don't plant trees, the wrong kind of trees, by flat work, concrete sidewalks, driveways? Because you know what? It drives me crazy. That issue right there drives me nuts. So, you think they're doing a good job of regulating that, making sure we're not putting sweet gum trees on a parking structure or a parking strip?
I believe that there's always some obstacle that prevents them from beating their head against the wall. I think this might relate. The other day, I got a travel trailer. Somebody put in the pressure reducer backwards, and because that one part was in backwards and wouldn't let the water into the trailer, I could not check out the holding tanks, I could not run the water, I couldn't even find out if my water heater worked because it was empty, all because of one thing. And with the cities, there's always been one thing that they've allowed to let them fail or have problems. I believe that they're making great efforts, but their efforts are always defeated by one thing. Originally, with the sweet gum trees, those have really bad root systems. So they would lift it. Then they went to columnar trees to try and get them to fit. But with columnar trees, the branch unions go narrow, which leaves you with the V-shaped unions, which are weaker. And then they don't have the money to prune them, such as Tualatin is one of those situations. And when the trunks expand and trap the inner trunks, you can't get a saw into the inner trunk there. So columnar trees presented another problem. Now, they're trying to go with better quality trees, which is good. And I think Hillsborough, I noticed the other day, was going with wider planting spots. But unless you require that the soil is verified as good below, which they don't do, it will not work, because you'd almost have to have somebody inspect that planting hole and say that there's no compaction there. Because if you compact a film layer, the roots are going to go down and head sideways. It could be the best tree that you have. You could have an 8-foot wide spot, but you're going to have that problem. So I believe that they're making efforts, but because of a couple of things like that, that they're still facing the same problem in a lot of cases. And the trees will still get big. Even a slow-growing tree that might take twice the time will cause the same problem. You know, instead of 2 decades, you'll see it in 4 decades. You see what I'm saying? You're just postponing the problem. So I don't know if that helps you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Could I have Paul Reese? Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Paul Reese. I'm here representing the Oregon Department of Forestry. I manage a small program called the Urban and Community Forestry Assistance Program, and our job is to provide financial, technical, and educational assistance to cities to help them deal with tree issues. In other words, I'm the guy that tries to help avoid the problems that Representative Schaffer just mentioned. We are in support of this bill. We believe this bill will make it easier for smaller cities that don't have urban forestry expertise on staff to contract for arboriculture services. And we also believe, as was alluded to by earlier speakers, that the competency improvements in this bill will result in healthy urban forests, less tree hazards in our cities, more qualified arborists, and we believe it's good public policy for the industry and for consumer protection.
Thank you, Paul. Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. Mr. Reese, I think I spoke to you on a phone last year, didn't
we? We did. We had a conversation around Christmas time.
And forgive me for digressing slightly, but it does directly related to what these folks are doing. I'm telling you, my mother-in-law, I poured 20 yards of concrete and replaced it on a commercial property on 39th and Main. She had 4 sweet gum trees. They had to replace that sidewalk, not the aprons, just the sidewalk, about 10 or 15 years ago. And I'm back there again doing it. And this time they let, I think, I can't remember the name of the tree service, came and took the trees down and ground, I think I ground the stumps up, but they wouldn't let them cut the last sweet gum tree down on the corner. And you know what, I'm telling you right now, there's just no way, that tree isn't going to wreck my work too. So somebody's going to be paying again. This is just not how I want to do it. Now, I think there should be some law saying you have to be a minimum radius away from any concrete structure before you can plant. I love trees. We got a lot of, I'm not against trees or the people that take care of them. But this issue, I mean, and all through Portland, here's the irony of it all. My mother-in-law spends all this money paying me, not very much because I gave her a great deal, and she had her car in the shop. Maybe it was down at Les Schwab, I don't know. But anyway,
I know she got a good deal.
And she's walking to church and by a city park on a city sidewalk and trips on a crack caused by a tree that the city owns, and the city wasn't maintaining their sidewalk, and broke her nose. Mm-hmm. Right when all that was going on. I'm telling you, it couldn't have been worse timing. I just get revved up when this comes up, and I've looked at it, and I'm going, all we're doing is perpetuating this problem at great cost and frustration to the homeowner and a taxpayer, and then nice people like me go and ask them for more money for schools, and you know what? They say no, because you're crazy down there. And I'm telling you, this really, I'm glad you're here. I love you. You're not doing a bad thing. I'm not against you, but this really frustrates me. I just wanted to have my opportunity. Get it on record to vet. Thank you very much. And thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Well, you're running some, sending some business my way. Huh?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Representing Holy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to digress for a minute, too. How far should I have planted my Sequoia gigantea away from my driveway?
Chair Brown, Representative Holby, I'd be glad to give you any arboriculture advice you'd like. There are certain planting standards, and part of the problem that Representative Schaffler mentioned is that not everyone abides by these standards, not everyone knows these standards. Part of this bill, I believe, will help with that. The answer to your question is I wouldn't put it any less than 20 feet.
Oops.
Mr. Chair, I have the solution to that in my garage. And once again, Mr. Chairman, please, and I don't mean you any disrespect, sir. I think you're doing a good job. I understand the value of trees, and not only from aesthetic value and property value, but environmental value and all that. And if you ever come to my house, I got plenty of trees. That's why we moved there. I love trees. But no disrespect meant to you and your department, sir.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond to Representative Schaffler. Regarding the example you showed earlier, one of the benefits of this bill, under the scenario that you talked about, and as far as removing those sweet gum trees, the homeowner in that case would have to contract with one entity under the licensed by the Construction Contractors Board to remove those trees, and then in order to replant three new ones, would have to contract with someone under the Landscape Contractors Board. And the benefit of this bill, I believe, allows them not to have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Just for the record, I have no problem with this bill, sir. I don't get the wrong intention.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony.
Thank you.
That's all we had signed up to testify. Is there anyone else want to testify on House Bill 2097? And then we'll close the public hearing. And we're not going to work that addition today. We're going to give you time to think about all the whether you want to plant a tree next to the concrete.
Think about your questions first.
That's another bill, Mr. Chair.
Right. I'd like to open a work session for the purpose of introducing some committee bills. I have what to do with them. Well, there they are. LC 1248 and LC 1656.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt LC 1248 and LC 1656 as committee bills, please.
Representative Schaffler moves we adopt LC 1248 and LC 1656 as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, we adopt them as committee bills. Janet, is there any other discussion?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, then, we are adjourned.